All right. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for coming. Appreciate it. We move on. I think this is number 11, right? Does that make sense? Number 11. Not the making of modern Judaism. That's the other shir. The history of the Talmud. We kind of concluded last week with the resolution of the conflict between Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Gamliel. And we spoke about Rav Reuven Margoliot's interpretation of what it was all about, and his claim that it was all about the influence of Beit Shammai, and how powerful we would consider that influence at all. Rabbi Gamliel, we saw, was not even a closet paskiner like Beit Shammai. He was an open paskiner like Beit Shammai. And once he is forced out of his position, it seems like he softens his position on that issue also. And somewhere around this time, you also have the conclusion that we're going to hold like Beis Hillel. And we also pointed out that holding like Beis Hillel doesn't mean only that, you know, now we're going to allow you to stand up when you say the nighttime Shema, and you don't have to actually lie down on your bed or on the floor when you recite the Shema. It also means that, or it also comes along with Beis Hillel's perspective on life, which is a far more open perspective, one that lends itself to greater discussion, creativity, etc., etc., etc. All those things that go along with it. One of the examples of it is we saw as one of the first things Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah does when he opens up, when he takes over the Beis Medrash, is you see the Rabbanim, besides Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, having a lot more power. You have the Rabbi Akivas of the world having much more of a say in the Beis Medrash. But also you have the doors opening to the vast array of opinions that are out there that were never allowed in beforehand. Remember, Beis Shammai was very, very particular about the type of students who could and should be taught. And Rav Elazar ben Azariah is much more open, again, with the, the tradition of Beis Hillel. And as you can imagine, is anytime there is a sea change in perspective, you can imagine that there will be those who object to this type of sea change. And we're going to be talking about two of those objectors. One is Rabbi Tarfon, the other is Rabbi Eliezer, both of whom are extraordinarily interesting in their perspectives that they take on it. Starting with Rabbi Tarfon. So we'll start, I mentioned earlier, just a few moments ago, the opinion, the argument between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel regarding the recitation of Shema in the evening, right? So we learn that you're required to say Shema in the morning and in the evening from the words B'shachbecha uvkumecha, when you lay down to sleep and when you get up in the morning. So the Gemara, the Mishnah in Brachos, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Gimel, says as follows: Beit Shammai omrim ba'erev kol adam yatu v'yikra'u. In the evening, each person should lie down and read the Shema. Uvavoker, and in the morning, ya'amdu, everyone should stand up. Shne'emar, literal interpretation of the pasuk, uvishach becha, uvkumecha, when you lie down and when you get up. That is the opinion of Beis Shammai. Uveis Hillel Omrim, Kol Adam Kore Kedarko, each person reads it according to his own path and his own methodology. Shneamar, Uvelechtecha Baderech, as it says, as you go upon your way. To which Beis Shammai asks Beis Hillel, wait a minute, Imkein Lama Neamar, Uveshach Becha of Kumecha. So why would it even bother to say when you lie down and when you get up, if it's Belechtecha Baderech, you can say it even when you're walking down the street. So Beis Hillel says, when do you recite the Shema? At the time when people get up, and at the time when people go to sleep. So now comes along Rabbi Tarfon. So you remember there were two shlavim, there were two moments in the history of the paskening like Beis Hillel. Moment number one, the original moment, which says, we hold like Beis Hillel, but if you choose to be stringent upon yourself, you can choose those stringencies. And then the later on, which is saying, we've knocked out, that you can't even be stringent upon yourself like Beis Shammai, even that. So here it tells of Rabbi Tarfon. So I'm a Rabbi Tarfon. So it says Rabbi Tarfon, Ani ha'isi bava derech, I was walking on the street, came time for Shema, Vihitesi likros kedivrei Beis Shammai. What did I do? I lie down to recite the Shema in order to be stringent like Beis Shammai. And what happens? Visikanti v'atzmi mipnei alistim. I almost got mugged. Okay, because what kind of person will lie down on the side of the road at nighttime? You're basically asking to be bung. So Amrulo, they said to him, it seems like the rest of the Beis Medrash, Kedai ha'isa lachov be'atzmecha she'avarta al divrei Beis Hillel. Says, yeah, you know, you were liable of being mugged, or even worse, because we hold like Beis Hillel. So what you see here from Rabbi Tarfon is that Rabbi Tarfon has a tendency or a desire, shall we say, to paskin like Beis Shammai. Old habits die hard, and he has this tradition of paskening like Beis Shammai, and this is something very much ingrained within him. Another area that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argued about is about levirate marriage. So we all know that if one brother dies, God forbid, it is a mitzvah for the living brother or one of the living brothers to marry his wife if she has no children, in order to that the family name or that the brother's name should live on. This is considered a very big mitzvah in the Torah. In those days, and in those days prior to it as well, the practice was to marry more than one wife. So too the practice was to marry within the family, and very often, as Avraham married Sarah, a brother would marry his niece. Okay? So let's use our parsha. We have Reuven and Shimon, our brothers. Okay? Reuven has a daughter, Shlomit. Okay? Shlomit marries Shimon, and Shimon is already also married to Sarah. Okay? Then, Chas v'Shalom lo aleinu, Shimon dies, leaving Shlomit and Sarah now to remarry. Okay? So who's left to remarry her, to remarry them? Reuven. So Reuven obviously can't marry Shlomit. Why? Because Shlomit is his daughter, and that's a clear prohibition in the Torah to marry your daughter. So is he permitted to marry now Sarah, who has no relationship with him whatsoever? So do we view that levirate marriage as one grouping, and if you can't do both, you can't do one? So the opinion of Beis Hillel is, if you can't marry Shlomit, then you can't marry Sarah. That's the opinion of Beis Hillel. The opinion of Beis Shammai is, no, just because you can't marry Shlomit doesn't mean you can't marry Sarah. Why is this important? Because, think about it. Let's say someone holds like Beis Shammai. If you hold like Beis Shammai, and you go out and you marry this woman, right? As it's a mitzvah in the Torah. So then, what happens? According to Beis Hillel, the child of that marriage is a bastard, is a mamzer, and is not worthy of entering into the Jewish people. Right? So, I mean, there's a lot at stake here. So, this is the story that the Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Tesvav Amud Beis, tells of Rabbi Tarfon. Tashma, Adama Rabbi Tarfon. So Rabbi Tarfon, just so you know, had a very, very extreme way of speaking. Okay? His extreme way of speaking, he would swear on the lives of his children on a fairly regular basis. You know, let me kill my two sons if this isn't true. You know what I mean? Like, he would say things like that. It's a very odd way of talking. Chazal, the other rabbis, were clearly not big fans of his type of terminology, and there are a number of Gemaras which seem critical of it. But just so you see that this type of perspective kind of fits into his thing. So to his perspective here when it comes to this levirate marriage. Dama Rabbi Tarnu, Ta'avani, Masai Tavot Tara Sabas Liadi Vesa'ana. It says, I long for the day that my brother will die, okay? And after him having married my daughter, okay, that I will be able to fulfill the words of Beis Shammai and marry his other wife. I long for that day. Vesa'inra, Einra, Vasiena, Vahatavani Kamar. Fine. So it's just an interesting thing, but Rabbi Tarfon definitely had this desire to paskin like Beis Shammai. The one thing that makes Rabbi Tarfon, I think, the most interesting is engaging of all the, I guess, objectors here, is he clearly does change his mind. We see a number of cases. I didn't bring them here, unfortunately. I didn't have time to put them all in here, but where Rabbi Tarfon takes very staunch positions. And then Rabbi Akiva, very lovingly, as is his way, will try to engage Rabbi Tarfon in conversation and convince him that his way is correct. You're lucky if you're Rabbi Akiva. He's an extraordinarily convincing person. He has a great mind at his disposal in which he's able to do it. And slowly but surely, he's able to bring Rabbi Tarfon over to what we'll call the Beis Hillel side of the force. I won't say whether it's the dark side or the light side, but the Beis Hillel side of the force. That is Rabbi Tarfon. Okay? On the other hand, you have Rabbi Eliezer. So we're in a unique moment in history. Why are we in a unique moment in history? And I think I mentioned this a couple of times. It's very rare that revolutionaries, particularly when it comes to intellectual revolutionaries, know how revolutionary they're being. Usually they're just doing it, and then, you know, some historian or intellectual historian looks back, you know, 50, 60 years into it and goes, whoa, we just had this massive sea change in the way we're thinking. You know, usually the person who's thinking like that doesn't really think that how much am I changing? I'm just, you know, using what I know. I'm thinking about it, and all of a sudden, you know, something new comes up and we realize it. Chazal, this generation, the Rabbi Akivas, the Rabbi Yoshuas, the Rabbi Ishmaels of the world, they are very much aware of the fact that they are revolutionaries. Why? Because they are looking at, because of halacha's new democratization, right, the fact that there's no longer a singular body deciding all of halacha, all of a sudden there is the opportunity for debate that has never existed before, and along with debate comes along this immense amount of creativity that is offered. And they were very, very much aware of this. And that's the other thing that comes along with Beis Hillel's tradition. Aside from the fact that he tends towards the more lenient Psak Halacha, what was it that caused them to choose Beis Hillel over Beis Shammai? Is that Beis Hillel would not only say their own Halacha, but first they would say the Halacha of Beis Shammai, right? They would say Shammai's position, they would explain Shammai's position, and then they would go and give their own position. Meaning, they were encouraging different perspectives on halachic interpretation, right? And all of a sudden, it's going to undermine or potentially call into question a lot of the traditional psak halacha that they've been doing until now. And that is a bold, bold move. And they had to make rules for this, right? You can't undo takanos. You can't undo decrees, right? Decrees can't be undone unless you have a Sanhedrin or unless you have a group that is gadol, b'chachma, v'minyan. They can't be just wiser, they have to be more and more plentiful than the original one. So they created rules because they knew how creative they were. And this rubbed, in particular, Rabbi Eliezer the wrong way. Rabbi Eliezer is the traditionalist, and I'm going to go about proving to you, this is based, just so you know, on a lot of it, on the works of Rav Binyamin Lau, in his book, The Sages. But what you have here is Rabbi Eliezer being really finding himself where he was once the staunch traditionalist. He finds himself being the iconoclast, the odd man out, in this new revolutionary war or revolutionary experience. It's not really a war. And it's interesting. I'm going to quote for you here a famous Gemara in Chagiga. The Gemara in Chagiga, Daf Gimel Amud Beis, quotes a Pasuk in Koheles, at the end, I think it's Perkid Aleph, Perkid Beis even. Divrei Chachamim, the words of the wise, kidarvonos, ukemas meros nituim. The words of the wise are like darvonos. They're like these pegs that they would use to keep sheep in line, ukemas meros, and they are like nails, nituim, that are nailed in or planted, balei asufot, in groups. Nitnu meroe echad, they were all given by one shepherd. So now the Gemara wants to know, Lama nimshalu divrei Torah lidarvan? Why was it called this prod? Why was Torah compared to a prod, right, that keeps the cows in line? Lamar lecha ma darvan ze mechavenes apara letalmeha lo tzi chayim laolam af divrei Torah mechonim neslom dea midarchei misa ledarchei chayim. So just like the reason you have the prod is in order to guide the cow or the sheep or the bull to its proper place and that it shouldn't die, so too, Torah is the way that will guide you to the proper way of life. Ima darvan zeh mitaltel, just like you can take the prod and you can move it from place to place. Afdi ve Torah mitaltelin, so too, the words of Torah can be movable from one place to another. Again, this is part of the tradition that they're giving here. What are they saying? They're saying that what is our goal as Talmidei Chachamim, as learners of the Torah, as purveyors of tradition, and as protectors of that tradition, is that we need to use Torah in order to guide the people in the proper path, and even though there's no Beis HaMikdash, we can still do that. Talmud Lomar Masmeros, why are they like nails? Ima masmer ze chaser velo yeter, af divrei Torah chaserin velo yitirin. Just like the more you bang it in, right, the stronger it is. So too, when it comes to Torah, the more you bring it in, the stronger it becomes. As more and more is hidden under, so too with the Torah. What about nituim, planted? So what happens when you plant? You take one seed, it produces a whole flower or a whole group of things. So what does it mean, nituim? Ma nitiyazo pre urave. Af divrei Torah prein uravin. Just like one seed creates more and more and more from just a single seed. So too, Torah is just as fruitful in the way that it grows. What about balei asufot, gathered? So elu talmidei chachamim sheyoshvin asufos ve'oskin b'torah. What does it mean, balei asufos? It's referring to the wise, the scholars who they sit in groups, right? Just like the groups of nails, they sit in groups and they learn Torah. So what happens now that we have this new experience, where everyone's saying what everyone wants, and everyone's reinterpreting? So halalu mitamin, v'halalu mitarin. These say it's pure, these say it's impure. Halalu osrin, these say it's prohibited, v'halalu matirin. And these say it's allowed. Hey, halalu poslin, these say it's pasul, and v'halalu machshirin, and these say it's kosher. So what does a person say? You know what a person says, because you guys have said it all the time. We all say it, right? What do you say? Shema Yomar Adam, Hechani lo meitor meata. It doesn't make any sense. He should have this opinion. He should have this. How am I going to learn Torah? So if you think you have the issue then, so imagine it now. Think about what the issue was like then. For hundreds of years, what have we done? There was one halacha. The Sanhedrin would decide it. You never knew that there was work product, right? They weren't producing the minority opinions in those days, right? You only found out what the Sanhedrin did. Now all of a sudden, you're finding out Rabbi Akiva holds this way, Rabbi Yeshua holds this way. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel have been fighting in the streets for 60, 70 years already. I mean, what's going on here? A person says, how am I supposed to learn Torah like this? Right, so what is the Gemara's Me'ata Tamud Lomar? Kulam nitnu me'roa echad. They were all given, they're all put there, all these nails were put there by what? By one shepherd, right? El echad netanan, one God gave them, Parnas Echad Amiran, one supporter, said them, Mipi Adon Kol HaMaasim, from the master of all creations, Baruch Hu, blessed be He. Dichtiv, as it says, Vayidaber Elohim Es Kol HaDivarim Ha'ile. Right? God said all of these things. So now what do you need to do? Af Atah Se'oz Necha Ke'afar Chases. what should you do? Make your ear like a funnel, right? And what should you do? Ukne lecha lev, find for yourself a heart or a mind. Basically, grow up, get yourself the proper knowledge in order to be able to understand and hear. Make lev mevin lishmo divrei metamim medivrei metarim, all the different opinions. The impure and the purers, the osrin and the matirin, the people who say it's asr, the people say it's mutter, divrei poslim and divrei machshirin. What's going on here? What's going on here is you have basically the rabbi saying, listen, this is the way Torah is learned, right? We don't have the benefits of a Sanhedrin where no one's going to find out about the fact that we've been arguing about this. Now, everybody's going to know we've been arguing about this. And that's great. That's wonderful, because that's the way God wanted it to be. When God gave the Torah, he wanted there to be numerous interpretations. If you want just some models that are given, so the way the Maharal has it, the Maharal says he's using 16th century physics or 17th century physics, he says, or chemistry, I don't know if you differentiated that much. He says the world is made up of four elements, earth, wind, fire, and water. He says, and every object is made up of all of a mixture of the elements. And what do you say? And everyone looks at it, and you say, you look at a tree, and a tree is, you know, partially earth, partially wind, partially water. And it depends on what you're going to view as dominant. A different person is going to view one thing as dominant, and another thing as dominant. Right? It's going to depend on how you look at it. So of course, they'll come to different interpretations, even though they're looking at the very same tree. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave one Torah, you look at it differently. It only becomes more complex now. Right? Because what do you look at it? A chemist, you know, if I lift up my arm, you know, so the physicist looks at it and says, that was potential energy being turned into kinetic energy. Right? The biologist, you know, looks at it about how the chemicals are transferred, you know, transfer the message from my brain to my arm. You know, the chemist might look at it some other way. And depending on who you are, they're all right, and it was all the same action. So the same thing with Hashem's Torah, that's the Maharal's interpretation. The Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Chaim Michal Epstein, so he gives a different interpretation. He says, for those of you who are more artistically inclined and less scientifically inclined, so he says, it's like a symphony, right? And what do? We all go into the symphony. There's harmonies, there's melodies, there's, you know, different tunes working together. And you go in, and we both heard the same symphony, it all sounds beautiful together, but when we come out, you said, oh my gosh, the violins were just amazing. And I said, what are you talking about? You didn't hear that percussion in the background? Some guy might have gone in and just heard the triangle, or, you know, that might have dominated it. We all heard the same one. It's the same thing. God gave this complex symphony of the Torah, and we hear, you know, and each person, each human being does his best to interpret, you know, what is the dominant and what is the secondary. And that's what it means. We're both right. We're both 100% right. Right? But what's the problem? There's no problem. We're both 100% right, and both of our interpretations were mamish given by God. He just gave it, you know, the human mind has to use whatever it's given for that interpretation. And what you have here is the Rabbi Akivas, the Rabbi Yoshuas of the world, who are embracing the opportunity for the plethora of ideas to be out there. They're loving this. That's what Rabbi Yeshua, you know, Rabbi Yeshua, this is embracing the ideals. This is what Hillel saw all those years ago when he took over the leadership of the Jewish people. He understood that this is the way Torah was going, right? That it was going to become this more democratized Torah, that it would be an opportunity for more and more people to experience it. And Hillel embraced this opportunity that went along with it. Okay, Shammai, on the other hand, was very much into my way or the highway, right? There's a tradition of Psak, you know, the way we've been going about things. And just because we've opened the doors to more people interpretation, A, who says we should have been opening the doors to all those people to be interpreting? What you're doing is you're ultimately letting in Talmidim She'enam Hagunim, you're letting in unworthy students who are going to be Megale Panim B'Torah, they're going to ultimately misinterpret that which is before them, and therefore we need to limit it, and we need to be very much specific in terms of how we decide things. Okay? That's the difference in interpretation. Once Rav Elazar ben Azariah, and we're going to see why Rav Elazar ben Azariah takes upon the major position here. Remember, he's the one who's thrust into the leadership position at a very young age. So just look at the continuation of the Gemara. B'lashon hazeh amar lahem, ein dor yasom, sh'Rav Elazar ben Azariah, sharoi besocho. And so the Gemara says that the generation that is blessed with the existence of Rav Elazar ben Azariah will never be orphaned. Mishum Maisa Shahaya, right? And it's a story. And now here's where you're going to find out Ravi Eliezer, who's very unhappy with this. If you remember, Rabbi Eliezer was described by his Rebbe, by Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, as what? As the boar seed, she'eino ma'abe tipa, he says in Pirkei Avos, in the second parak. Right? He says Rabbi Eliezer is what? He is a cistern, a dugout well that is plastered on the inside that never loses one drop. What's Rav Elazar ben Azariah's job? His job is to preserve the past, right? To preserve what's been said, right? What's the case? So Maisa Shahaya, the Gemara goes on and talks about a certain case. This is all in the Gemara in Chagiga. Ditanya, we learned in a Braisa. Maisa Rabbi Yosi ben Dur Maskis Shahalach Lahakbil Pnei Rav Elazar Belud. So he goes to visit Rabbi Eliezer, in Lod. He goes to visit him. Amar lo machidish haya b'beis ha-medrash hayom. So he says, what novel thing was said in the beis medrash today? So amar lei, so he answers him, nimnu v'gamru amonu moav ma'asrin ma'isr sheni b'shviyas. So they counted up, meaning they voted on it, and they decided that Ammon and Moab, the east bank of the Jordan River, the communities there, even during the Shemitah year, remember, they're not technically part of the land of Israel, even during the Shemitah year, what do? They give maser, they give one-tenth to the poor. They tithe for the poor. Amar lo, Yosi, pshot yadcha v'kabel einecha. So Rabbi Eliezer says to Rabbi Yosi, open up your arms and close your eyes. Pasha yada v'kibel einav. So he does this and he closes his eyes. Bacha Rabbi Eliezer v'amar, Rabbi Eliezer closes his eyes and he starts to cry. Sod Hashem l'reyav u'bris lahodiyam amar lo lechem or lahem al tachosh l'minyanchem. He says, close your eyes, and he says, I'm crying. Why is he crying? Go and tell them we didn't even need you guys to vote on it. We never needed this vote. Why? Kach mekublani mi Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai. I have a tradition. I could have told you. They decided on this. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai said this 100 years before. Well, not 100 years before. 10 years earlier. And Shishamo mirabo. Virabo mirabo. And he heard it from his rabbi. He heard it from his rabbi. Halchasala Moshe mi Sinai. It's halacha that goes all the way back to Moshe. We didn't need your fancy schmancy discussions. We didn't need your Talmudic, manipulations. We had a tradition. If only you guys would have kept the tradition, you wouldn't even had this discussion. So the question is, did they not know in the Beis Medrash that this was a discussion? They knew it was a discussion. They knew that there was a tradition. But for them to decide things, it had to be a discussion. Rav Elazar, what are you doing? He's unhappy with the whole experience. Rabbi Eliezer is unhappy with the whole experience. Why? What is Rabbi Eliezer? What's his perspective? So Gemara in Sukkah, Da Chazayin Amud Beis, tells another story about Rabbi Eliezer. Okay? Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, Maisa b'Rabbi Eliezer sheshavas b'galil ha'elyon b'sukaso shal Rabbi Yochanan b'Rabbi Elai b'kisari. So Rabbi Eliezer finds himself dwelling in the Sukkah of Rabbi Yochanan, the son of Rabbi Elai, in Caesarea, in Caesarea. So what happens? They're sitting in the sukkah, and it's hot. It's really hot. Okay? So he says to him, Amar lo, Ma'usha frosa le'asadin. He says, I know it's Shabbos. He says, but am I permitted to cover my sukkah with a covering, some sort of shady covering, some sort of cloth that will prevent the sun from beating down so hard upon the sukkah? So the Amarlos, Rabbi Lazar answers. Rabbi Eliezer answers him. Ein lecha kol shevet v'shevet miYisrael shelo ha'amid mimenu shofet. He says, isn't it amazing that there isn't one tribe in all of Israel that didn't have its own judge? You know, he looks at the bucket. Just such an amazing thing. What's he doing? Changing the subject. All right. He waits a few minutes. Higiyacham el chatzi sukkah. So now half the sukkah is bathed in this intense sun. It's hot. Amar lo, ma'u shefros alas sadin.